Blog Talk Radio.
See you and me riding like Bonnie and Clyde, rolling 95, burning down 129, yeah. Looking for the law while I push my luck. Shotgun like it ain't no thing. Turn the radio off so the girl can sing right. Pull into the party like y'all was some. Night is bottoms up. Throw it on down. Rock this quiet little country town. Drop the tailgate on your truck. Find a keg and fill your cup. Oh, kick it on back. Pretty little mama looking at you like that. Girl, I gotta tip my hat. Never thought a country song make you move like that, yeah. And she's doing any days you do, girl. She got you tapping on the boy show. Hey, Dom, check this out. Man, it's how them girls do it in the dirty side, yeah. She'll have you on the knee, can I marry you? If the night is bottoms up, throw it on down. Rock this quiet little country town to get up. Drop a tailgate on your truck. Find a keg and feel your cup. Oh, kick it on back. Pretty little mama looking at you like that. Make you wanna slide on in like, girl, what's up? Tonight is bottoms up. Get em up. Tonight is bottoms up. Drinks up high, everybody feeling alright. Damn right. Cause tonight is bottoms up. Throw it on down, rock this quiet little country town to get up. Drop a tailgate on your truck. Find a keg and feel your cup. Oh, kick it on back. Pretty little mama looking at you like that. Take you on the side of.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. It is Wednesday night. This is Off the Chain. I am your host, Yvonne Mason. And for those of y'all that have followed this show since its inception, know that this is our anniversary month. We are a year old this month. In the last 2 weeks of this month, I am playing music that my little 13-year-old granddaughter, who is no longer with us, loved. That piece was Brantley Gilbert's Bottoms Up. And if you've not heard that young man until tonight, I ask you to go and get his music, because he had such an impact on my granddaughter that I could never pay that debt back. He helped her to learn to love herself where she was in life. And he gave the last few months of her life meaning. And I am forever grateful to that young man for what he did. He has no idea how important that was to her and how grateful I, as her grandmother, and her family are that he was so kind to her. So go and check out his music. That was Bottoms Up, Brantley Gilbert. Now, on a happier note, ladies and gentlemen, I said that when the show turned a year old, I wanted us to have at least 20,000 listeners on this show. Well, ladies and gentlemen, by the time this show is officially 1 year old, which will be the 27th of this month, I fully expect us to have 25,000 listeners, because this morning when I ran the numbers, we were at 23,457 listeners. And I have to give a shout out to Australia, because they are our biggest supporters on this show on Blog Talk Radio. And I am forever humbled by my listening audience, because this show is about all of y'all. It is about my guests, like my guest tonight, Arthur Rowe Morgan, who we will get to shortly. Without the guest and without my listeners, I could sit here and talk all day and it wouldn't make any difference. All total, we were listened to in over 70 countries. So with all the podcasts we put up, this show shows up on iTunes, YouTube, TuneIn Radio, Stitcher, FM.com, SoundCloud, MixCloud, Podcast.com, Podomatic, and I can't tell you the others. There's several other podcasts that other people put up. This is where we're heard. We are at 35,622 listeners. I can't tell you how humbled I am and how grateful I am that you, the listening audience, are getting the independent artists, business people, musicians, and writers a chance to be heard in places they wouldn't be heard otherwise. So thank you so much. Also, if you would like to be a sponsor on this show, if you will go to advertisecast.com and in the search engine type in Off the Chain, for pennies on the dollar, I will do an ad for you, and it will run for a month on this show, and you'll be heard all over the world too. So go check it out, advertisecast.com, and pull up in the search engine Off the Chain. Ladies and gentlemen, it's going to be one of those nights. I was just talking to Ro, and she and I both between us have had 7 hours sleep last night, so this should be fun. She had 4, I had 3, so we will have a fun time tonight. With that being said, let me introduce to you author Ro Morgan. She discovered the magic in stories at a very early age, both in books and the ones she made up in her head. As a child growing up in a remote Southern California canyon, she explored the wild hills barefoot with her brothers and rode a horse bareback at top speed. A wicked youth spent hitchhiking across the West and perched on Harleys. The woman is a woman after my own heart. She eventually gave it away to soccer mom duties and full-time college studies, both at the same time. In her spare moments, Roth learned how to herd cattle, sword fight, and plant an arrow or a knife in a target. And she says not necessarily at the same time, but I bet she could. Her Renaissance fair and costuming experience helped her clothe her characters, and a martial arts background breathes life into her action scenes. A fascination with moving machines shows up in her stories in the form of exotic cars and rumbling motorcycles. Roth, honey, welcome. And I'm tired reading this. That just made
me
tired.
I look back on it, I'm going, did I really live that life?
I think you did. So before we start talking about all of the characters that are in your head, tell me, how in the world did you get from a barefoot girl in a California canyon riding horseback to sword fighting, herding cattle, shooting arrows, throwing knives, and another one of my favorites, because I did martial arts, plus go to school, plus raise kids. Now, I want to know, were you cloned and not tell anybody?
No, but I was a single mom, which made it even more
challenging. Oh, yeah, that's a challenge. So let's start back in the good old days when you were a wee child. Was writing something you always wanted to do, or was it something that just morphed?
Well, what happened, you know, all those things that you mentioned that I have done, all came about from my love of books and stories. And I had some formative years where I read animal stories when I was younger, and then I got a little older and I went to science fiction, fell in love with science fiction. Somewhere along the way, I got a smattering of Westerns from my grandparents and fell in love with the steely-eyed stranger who was quick with a gun and kind with his hand and, you know, just that kind of thing. And then the real kicker for me was I read Lord of the Rings when I was 15 in high school, and it made a huge impact on me. I discovered fantasy. I wanted a cloak. I wanted a sword. And at one point in time when I grew up some many, many years later, I actually have. Although so I've got 3 or 4 cloaks in my closet, I own 3 or 4 swords, and I do know how to use them. So I will credit books with my interesting life.
Well, the question that I have is, as those stories danced around in your head, could you see yourself doing all of that?
No, I didn't. I mean, you know, I would kind of make up my own stories in my head when I'd fall asleep at night. I'd pretend I was a shapeshifter or, you know, whatever. And I never really thought serious about writing anything down till my kids were in junior high, and I had an inspiration for a kid's time travel series, and I kind of thought the whole thing out, and I thought, oh, this would be great, but I'm going to have to wait till I'm retired because I'm just too busy to tear into books, and I'm real OCD. When I do something, I want to do it 100%, and I don't want anything else bothering me while I'm doing it. And so I just set that idea aside, and then 20-some-odd years later, I, after all the craze with Twilight and all that stuff, I kind of woke up with a story in my head and this character who was really intriguing. She was lamenting the fact that she could no longer be near her family, and she kind of hated what she was. And I was so curious about her, I just started kind of writing it down. And then she, over the period of 5 months, kind of unveiled her whole story to me in movie form. And I almost felt like she and the other main character had pretty much possessed my life, and it was a life changing moment for me. That was in 2009, and so I'm kind of late to coming to writing, and I haven't looked back since.
Do you find now that character's name is Sunny, right?
Yes.
Do you find that when Sunny, this, and ladies and gentlemen, y'all know I deep dive my guests, so I find out things that most people don't just because I can. Did you, when you were seeing Sunny and she was dancing around in your head, did you find that that's all you could think about? You slept with her, you ate with her, you worked with her, you walked with her. You couldn't do anything but think about her and the story itself.
That was pretty much my experience. In fact, I felt that she and Nicholas had both kind of taken me over. And when I was working during the day at my day job, I'd take walks at lunch, and a story would be playing in my head. And I always saw it as a movie. They never talked to me directly or anything like that, like, you know, I hear some authors talk about. But they just, this movie would just play in my head, and I'd come home from work at night, and I'd watch a little bit of TV with my husband, and then he'd go to bed, and the house would get quiet, and I'd start writing. And it would just, it was so surprising. I was never real sure what was going to come next. You know, I knew the beginning of the story, and I knew the end of the story, and I knew a couple of things in the middle. And other than that, I had no idea how it was going to go, and it just unrolled like a movie. And I would write till about 2 in the morning. Then I'd go to bed and get up at 6 and go to work, and that would go on all week. And then on the weekends, it was even worse. I wouldn't go to bed till about 5 in the morning, and I'd get up at 8 and get going again. So, yeah, talk about being possessed by your characters. That was my experience.
Oh, yes, I understand that. I do. Now, what brought you to hitchhiking across the West and riding Harleys? I understand, because riding Harleys to me is like riding my horse when I had horses. Ladies and gentlemen, if you've never ridden horses or never ridden Harleys, that is the closest thing to being free. Would that be a fair statement, Ro?
That's pretty darn close, and they're very similar. You know, when you ride a bike, there's things that are so similar to riding a horse, especially if you ride a horse bareback, with your balance and you know, the way you shift your weight. It's the same with the horse, you know, or if you're even in a saddle, you know, and so many of the parts are even the same. On a mm-hmm. motorcycle seat is called a saddle.
Right.
But yeah. So there's a lot of similarities between them. And as far as the hitchhiking, I don't know. I was 18 and I was a hippie and I had a couple of girlfriends. We were in Colorado and we decided to hitchhike out to California to visit family, and we spent 3 weeks on the road. But even, you know, before that, I'd been hitchhiking around Colorado a bit, and I usually brought a dog with me to make sure I would be okay, and it wasn't really the smartest thing, and I never really had any trouble, but I finally kind of wised up and decided I was on borrowed time, and boy, I met some great people.
And the thing is, though, did experience that you gained from doing that, from having the wherewithal and the naivete, let's say, to hitchhike, because in that time period, Ro, girls hitchhiked a lot because it was that time period. It was the time of hippies and moving around and being gypsies. So it was nothing for girls to hitchhike, and a lot of them sadly did not make it. But did you find that you learned a lot of things you might not have learned had you not done it?
It built experiences that kind of, you know, I learned things about the world that I might not have otherwise learned in my, you know, previously sheltered life. It was a time of freedom, and you know, the big trip that I took with a couple of my girlfriends, we had a blast and we met some amazing people, and you know, I wouldn't trade it for the world.
Wouldn't do it again, though, would you?
Nope. Too many crazies out there right now.
That is the
truth. And in fact, when I quit, I had actually had kind of a scary encounter. And of course, I was in Wyoming. It was a little bit different hitchhiking around Wyoming than it was hitchhiking around Colorado, because that's where I did most of my travels, was in Colorado, other than the trip out to the West Coast. But, I didn't, you know, I had one scary incident and managed to extricate myself from the situation. I actually, the guy was going to pull off the side of the road and take me off into the, you know, wilderness, and I just turned around and attacked him, and he didn't know what to do. He had a brand new truck. I started kicking the dash of his truck with my boots and slammed on the brakes, and he let me out, and that was that.
But, smart girl.
Yeah, that was the last time I stuck my thumb out.
You walked the rest of the way, right? Forget it. I'm out of here. I'm done.
If I can't get there with somebody taking me, I ain't going.
Now, when did you learn to sword fight and throw a knife and do archery?
So that was, my daughter was in high school, and I was a chaperone for a drama workshop that they were doing. It was a two-day drama workshop at a neighboring high school, and one of the classes they had, well, they had several combat classes, and of course I've always been fascinated with that stuff, and we took the sword fighting class, you know, I picked up a rapier, which is a very thin-bladed sword, mm-hmm. and I picked that up and kind of swung that around and a little bit, and I thought, oh, my God, I feel like I've done this before. And it was just
wow.
A curious feeling, and that sword just felt so comfortable in my hand. And that guy, our instructor, his name was John Crawford, he went on to teach me and my daughter another handful of kids all how to sword fight, and we get together once a week and do all of our stretching and exercises and then learn our cuts and our parries. He modeled all his sword fighting after the Italian woodcuts from the 17th, 18th centuries, and also did some theatrical performances. And then, you know, once we got good enough, we started doing performances at local Renaissance fairs, and I also got into the Renaissance fairs at that time with the costuming and everything. So, and of course, all of the, you know, part of that was the knife throwing and the archery as well.
And then just for grins and giggles, you threw in some martial arts. What did you take?
Yeah. When my children were little, I took from a couple of Korean guys. They were great. They hardly spoke English, and we had class 5 nights a week, and they were intense.
Whoa.
I learned Hapkido and a little bit of Taekwondo and a little bit of Kung Fu all mixed in together, and it was it was neat. I really enjoyed it. I did it for maybe about a year, and then I ended up injuring myself, and I had to back off. And other than some Tai Chi classes later on, I never quite got back to it, but I still remember that feeling and that stance and that, you know, control of the body. And
it's an empowerment.
It is. And, you know, I even took a class at one point called Model Mugging when I lived over in San Luis Obispo and was going to school. And it was a self-defense class for women. And it's just one of those classes where they have, you know, they teach you some moves and then they have assailants come after you. And these assailants are padded up with the helmets and stuff. And they teach you to actually follow through, to punch as hard as you can, which is something different than you don't learn that in martial arts. In martial arts, you learn to kind of pull your punches. You don't really want to hurt your opponent in your sparring matches. But this was different. So you learn how to really follow through and what it feels like to slam that fist home or kick that kick as hard as you can. And
I had a martial arts instructor, and I'm 4'11", and I took Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. I loved it. My martial arts instructor told me, he says, and he was like 6'11". I mean, he was a giant of a man, and he could literally pick me up. And when he would throw me, I would wind up across the room. Not because he meant to, but I was so light. But he told me, he says, and I'm a bounty hunter. And he says, you will not always be able to take down a 200-pound man. He says, that's why you carry a ball bat.
Right.
I said,
my daughter
point.
Learned Brazilian capoeira, which is I don't know how that differs from jiu-jitsu, but capoeira is a real interesting one. There's a lot of cartwheeling and things like that.
Ooh.
But you're right. Baseball bat or, you know, a 38 or whatever is always kind of
well, I have
nice
both.
Having
I have
backup.
I have a 3-foot wooden billy stick that stays in my car, and then I have several firearms around the house. So, and if that doesn't work, I'll just cuss at them and talk to them and say, bless your heart. And in the Southern, they go, what? But anywho, so you took all, and ladies and gentlemen, not only does she do all these things which are near and dear to me, but the woman also likes one of my favorite authors, Miss Anne Rice. Now, how in the world did you get started on Miss Anne Rice?
I watched Interview with a Vampire when it was first out, and I fell in love with Brad Pitt and his character, Louis, and I fell in love with the idea of these elegant vampires that could kind of masquerade as humans, and I loved Louis, how tortured he was, and his useless struggle to maintain his morals. And I suppose that's probably influenced my stories a lot more than I would, you know, had realized. But and once I had watched that, then I read all the books, and then I started reading all the vampire books that were popular in that era, which was the 90s. And and fell in love with all the different twists that authors can give their vampires, everywhere from the vampires that are born rather than made it's such a fascinating mythology, because you can really do anything with it. You know, the basis is you have an immortal creature who feeds off the life force of the living, and, you know, how does that happen? Is that, you know, like I said, are they made? Are they born? You know, are they evil? Are they tortured? You know,
Do they have a conscience?
Fascinating. Do they have a conscience? It's a fascinating genre to play with. And so I do credit Anne Rice, although I do have to go back a little earlier. My actual first vampire love was Barnabas Collins on the old TV show Dark Shadows.
Yes, love
and
that show.
I was
show.
A 14-year-old girl who had the hots for this old guy, and I had no idea why I had the hots for him, but there was something about him that was just so intriguing.
He was mesmerizing. I could not
wait to get home
to watch, because he... Everybody knew he was evil, but he didn't present himself as evil. He presented himself as this mysterious character with a conscience. Sometimes he even had a conscience.
Yes. And then the more you learned about his backstory, the more you understood some of his actions.
Right.
And so, yeah, so he was actually my first introduction to the vampire world that I really recall. I mean, I did see some of the movies when I was a kid, but I was never much of a horror fan. So I do like the version of Dracula. It's an older one, and it has Frank Langella in it. Langella?
Yes.
Langella,
yeah,
I think it's
Frank Langella.
That
yeah.
was kind of, yeah, that's kind of a sexy one, and I liked that one because he was very much the seducer. But yeah, so I guess I have to pretty much credit Barnabas Collins and Anne Rice for my current writing binge.
Thank you, Barnabas Collins and Anne Rice. What in my opinion, for what it's worth, what she did is she brought the mystique of the vampires back, like the Barnabas Collins. And if you go even further back to Shelley's book, not Shelley, who wrote the first one, Bram Stoker's book, Dracula. He was rather romantic and on some level had a conscience, but he was a bloodsucker. I mean, he just was.
Yeah, when I actually read that book, which really was only a few years ago that I actually read Dracula, I was surprised at how scary it actually is. There's
mm-hmm.
some scary scenes in there. You know, and then there's been so many movie versions. I think the best one so far has been the Bram Stoker's Dracula. I think that's the one that Francis Ford Coppola did.
Yes.
It has Gary
yes.
Oldman in it. Yeah, that's got to be one of the best versions of Dracula out there. But yeah, it's a fascinating genre, and I have on Facebook, I've noticed that Anne Rice has been posting quite a bit lately. She's looking, and I don't know how far along it is, but she's looking at bringing the Vampire Chronicles in a serialized form to TV, so similar to Game
Ooh.
Of Thrones or what have you.
That would
and,
be so neat.
It would definitely be interesting.
And speaking of, I know that you have a piece you want to read, and then I want to ask you, what is Woodsberry? But read this while we're on your stories. Read this piece first, because I'm sitting here drooling, waiting to listen to you bring these characters to life.
Okay. Let's see here. This would be the opening to Watcher. So let me give you a little background on the books. The first book is Watcher, Book One of the Chosen. And this is the story of a young woman who was attacked and left for dead. And when she regains consciousness, she realizes she is no longer human. And she's horrified at what she's become. She has a bloodthirst that she has difficulty controlling. And so she fears going home. She doesn't want to harm her teenage daughter and or anybody else, and she retreats into the woods for several years. And when she finally starts getting a control over her bloodthirst, she's so lonely. The loneliness drives her out of the woods, and she starts trying to integrate back with human society again. So she tends bar at night. And then when she can, she slips away to go kind of watch her daughter live her life out. And her daughter, of course, thinks she's dead. That's the first book. And then there's Runner and Seeker, which are the two sequels that follow her life. So this is basically her journey to find her place in the world. And along the way, she finds love and loses love and finds it again. And they're all different forms. And she learns to finally accept what she is and to come to terms with it. So that's kind of the background. And I'll go ahead and read the opening scene from Watcher. I watch my daughter, the sunlight dancing across her long, dark hair, cradle her swollen belly as she kneels to place the flowers on my empty grave. Pink carnations this time. Last year was red roses, the year before, golden mums. Her shoulders quake with her sobs, and swallowing, I fight to stifle my own. Her lips move as she whispers to the flower-strewn ground, but I'm too far away to hear her precious words. Throat tight, I struggle to remain still, hidden by the large eucalyptus at the other end of the cemetery. She caresses my name etched into the gray granite, tracing the letters one by one before wiping the tears from her cheek. Her fingers touch her lips, then the top of the cold, hard stone. My own fingers clamp against my mouth and smother the impulse to cry out to her. She looks so much like me, the me I used to be. Tall, willowy, she's become a woman since I disappeared 5 years ago, and soon, to my surprise, will become a mother. The inferno of emotions ignited by her pregnancy threatens to devour me, and I do not think I can remain quiet much longer. For once, I hope she will end her visit soon and leave. She stands and turns toward her car. A breath of summer wind lifts a few dark strands of her hair, and they float for a moment, waving goodbye. Her scent reaches out to me and triggers memories of our brief life together. 17 years was not enough. Not enough time to share with her, to hold her and teach her and tell her how much I love her. In a flash of anger, I curse the evil creature that stole me away, leaving my daughter to finish growing up alone, and leaving me no longer human. My chest heaving, I watch her drive away, then step between the markers and cross the lawn to my grave. Once again, I read the inscription on my headstone. Sunshine Collins, beloved mother and best friend, October 10th, 1969 to 2002. Trembling, I rest my fingers where hers last touched, press them softly against my lips, and whisper, I love you, Andrea.
Powerful. Very powerful.
That is our Sunny. She's tortured. She has found ways to survive in society. She lives off of animals in the woods. And, in fact, she has quite a violent side that, you know, she has found a way to have an outlet for.
Interesting. Very interesting. Now I can't wait to rate it. Oh, you're so evil, Ro. evil woman. So, no, y'all cannot go now. You've got to wait because I'm going to ask Ro a question that I know you want the answer to, and y'all think that I didn't pay attention when she said what she said, but I did. And the reason I'm going to ask this question is because I've had some of the same experiences. And the question is this. When you picked up that rapier and you said, I've done this before, I firmly believe that we have lived other lives. I know I have, because I can be in the middle of a conversation or be in a place I've never been before and say, I've been here before, or I've done this before. And there's certain sensations that happen to me that I've said, I've experienced this before. So it could be very possible that in another life you were a swordsman.
I have no doubt about that. And actually, I will tell you a little story about that. I have Mustang horses, and I had just adopted a beautiful buckskin mare and her baby. And we had hauled them over to a friend of mine's house who was a very accomplished Mustang handler. And we had this mare. We had the baby in another pen. We had this mare who was just stone wild. She was in a round pen, we call it, to kind of work her a little bit and see how open she would be.
I've had horses, so I know what a round pen is.
Yeah. And so this mare was absolutely beautiful. And for our listeners who are not familiar with what a buckskin color horse is, they have a tan body with black legs, black mane and tail, and black tipped ears, and usually their muzzle, their nose, is black too. And she had these dark dabblings, these shadings across her tan coat that made her look almost like the color of burnt buttered toast. She was just magnificent. But the other thing she had, she was what we call Spanish type, and she had this really long, long mane that hung down on both sides of her neck, past her shoulders. She was just stunning. And this mare is going around the round pen, and I'm standing there with this horse trainer and this other gal who was a friend of hers, a dressage rider. So we got a cowboy and a gal who's got some Mustangs and this dressage rider, and we're all standing there, and this mare goes around the round pen, and then she stops and faces us. And the weirdest thing happened. It's like the air around her shimmered, and for just a brief moment, I saw a Native American woman standing there in her buckskins with her hair hanging down.
Whoa.
And it was so, I mean, my hair lifted up all over my body, and I was like, what? And my friend next to me says, did you see that? And the third gal looks at me and she says, there was a woman standing there, and we all looked at each other and went, whoa. We all saw it. It was bizarre. It was wonderful, because I always thought things like that were real. And mm-hmm. and so I've always treated that mare as though there was an Indian woman inside of her. And my distinct impression
that.
Was she had died violently at the hands of, you know, cavalry. That was just the story I got from her briefly, you know, just in that flash. And, you know, she had placed herself in my hands to take care of her, and I did for the 18 years I had her.
And she responded,
when she
sure.
passed, she passed with her head pretty much in my lap, you know, and it was...
Wow.
So,
I
believe in them.
Yeah. I do too, because there's been too many things that have happened to me in my life that are not explainable to most people. And I am also an empath, and I think you are too, in that I pick up on other people's emotions, feelings. I know when things are going to happen, see things like that, that if people didn't know me, go, Yvonne, you're crazy. No, I'm not crazy. I see these things. And people that don't understand it, we can't explain it to them because they'd never understand it. But all three of you ladies saw her. She wanted to be manifested to y'all to let y'all know, this is who I was. Treat me with that kind of respect that I deserve.
Yeah. Yeah. And I hadn't even verbalized what I'd seen. Somebody else verbalized it, but that's what I saw. And in fact, all three of us, and we couldn't stop talking about it afterwards. It was just it was really amazing.
And
so
she
I
was
felt
letting
like
you
it was
know.
A,
yeah,
a it
sign.
Was like a gift. Yeah,
yes, absolutely.
It was a gift because, to say, here, this is who
wow.
I was.
That you gave me chill bumps, Ro. You're gonna have to write that story. You know that, right?
I probably will someday.
Now, you also write for young adults and middle school. What mm-hmm. books do you write for middle school kids?
I have a little, you know, I have a series, and there really hasn't been anything published of it because I've got it kind of set aside right now while I'm working on the Watcher series. But it's a story, it's a series about a kind of a parallel world. It's called Forbidden Doorways, and that world kind of is a kind of a sanctuary for mythological creatures, you know, like vampires and werewolves and shapeshifters and the like. And they're mostly Western, you know, European type mythologies. But I do have one story out. It was published in an anthology, and I also sell, when I go to book fairs and stuff, I have standalone copies of it. And it's Fur Before Feathers, and it's about a young boy, a freshman-aged boy, learning how to shapeshift for the first time. And that's what that is. And that's a series. There's a novel that's nearly complete, and I have probably three or four novellas that are complete, but I'm just kind of keeping that whole thing tucked aside while the vampires are ruling my life.
They do have
and as soon as they let me go, then I'll have time to work on the other.
Well, they will never let you go. This is what Anne Rice says about Lestat and the characters in those books, is that they literally take over her life. And I can relate to that, because when a character wants to be heard, it won't shut up.
Yeah. Yeah, that exactly. And, you know, to be fair to Sanders and Sullivan and those in the Forbidden Doorways world, they know their time. They're biding their time, and they've had their moments where they had my attention and wouldn't let me go. And I always write, you know, most of my stuff's got some deep emotional wounds in it. I kind of like darker material. I like the struggle. I like it when the monsters that everybody's battling are those within themselves. And those, to me, are the most fascinating stories. I do have a little trouble. I have a lot of friends in the Horror Writers Association, which I'm a member of. But a lot of my friends' works, I can't read them because they're too scary for me. One of my favorite writers, I had to put her book down because I was starting to have nightmares. And I told her name is Lisa Morton. I told Lisa, I says, Lisa, I love this book, but I had to stop reading. I was having nightmares of these pumpkins attacking me, and I just can't do it anymore.
pumpkins? Okay.
Well, yeah, but well, there was evil pumpkins involved. So, anyhow, but yeah, but I do like emotional horror. To me, that is a fascinating territory to explore.
Well, and because emotional horror, when we think about it, Ro, emotional horror is and can be real. It's
oh, yes.
Our everyday lives sometimes. It's the deepest, darkest part of us that we don't ever allow anybody to see.
Yeah. Well, everything I write, though, is in the fantasy genre. I have enough of the real world on a day-to-day basis that I like to retreat into fantasy when I'm on my off time, whether it's somebody else's or my own. But I always have more fun cloaking real-world issues and problems in kind of a supernatural framework.
And that's what makes you so good. And ladies and gentlemen, when you find out what her day job is, I don't want y'all falling down on the floor going, what? What this woman does is she works for the agriculture department, and she advises farmers on their farming. Is that the right way to put it?
Yeah, actually, I help them learn conservation-minded practices to help conserve their soil and their water and use those resources a little more wisely.
Mm-hmm. Now, tell me if that's not a challenge.
What I went to school for is I actually have a degree in, of all things, soil science. For those of you who aren't familiar with it, there actually is a science of the dirt. And I'm very into organic agriculture and less use of chemicals and, you know, using methods to help preserve and feed the land. You know, my philosophy is if you feed the soil will feed your plants.
Yep.
And so so that's what I do during the day, yes.
And on that same note, if we don't take care of the land, it won't take care of us. If we waste the land, if we abuse the land, it's like anything else. It doesn't give back to us.
When you look back at the fall of many of the great or even not so great civilizations, most every time it goes back to them running out of their resources and using poor farming practices that exhaust the soil. So they produce less and less, and that's a primary reason for war. That's a primary reason for the fall of any, you know, civilization is lack of resources. And if you don't care for the proper, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, and would it be fair to say that it takes generations, as in plural, for the earth to replenish itself? It's like a deep cut. You know, if you cut yourself to the bone, it takes a while for it to heal. It's the same thing with the soil.
Yes, and of course with soil, you know, you can help it. There's practices you can do to help rebuild it, but it does take time.
Do you find that farmers are more open to conservation and taking care of the soil so the soil will take care of them? Or do they tend to want to fight you on it because the old adage, we've always done it this way?
Most of the growers that I work with are real open to ways to save money and ways to help their land produce better, and if that means you know adding compost and using cover crops and you know tilling less, then you know most of them are willing to try it. That's been my experience.
And also, ladies and gentlemen, for those of y'all that have never farmed, the best way to recycle a plot of land is you work it for 7 years and then you let it lay fallow for 7 years. Would that be a fair statement, Ro?
I think that may be kind of an outdated approach to it. It depends on where and what kind of soil you have. You know, if you're in a soil in an area where there's a lot of rainfall and your soils tend to be more acidic, you farm them one way. If you're in an area like in California where it's dry and we only get rain in the winter and we don't have any summer rains, you farm them a different way. So it really depends on what you're farming and where you're at and what your soil is like and the climate and everything. You know, for me, 7 years farming the same thing seems an awful long time. I would prefer to see crop rotation where you're rotating that crop either every year or every couple of years with something different. So each crop mines the soil for different nutrients. And there's crops you can plant that actually will feed the soil, you know, such as cover crops that will help build the soil back up. So for me, it 7 years is a long time. I would rather see, you know, more active nurturing of the soil. And then to go fallow for 7 years, well, in fallow, nothing's happening. So that means there's no inputs either. So that fallow land, if you're cover cropping it and you're adding plants that actually help build the soil back up, that might be a little different story.
See, ladies and gentlemen, not only do we discuss books with our authors, but we learn how to manage crops, because I'm going to tell you, there are, and we laugh, but I grew up, my grandmother had a garden, and that's what we lived off of in the wintertime. So I grew up tilling and keeping a garden, and even when I was married to my children's father, we had a garden, and that's what we lived on in the wintertime. And I guarantee you 99% of the young people, unless they've lived on a farm or worked a farm, have no idea how to even make a smaller garden, much less acres, which is sad.
Yeah, well, and the biggest enemy out there too also tends to be the insects that want to come in and lay waste to your garden. I attempt gardening now and then, and boy, it's amazing what tomato hornworms can do to a tomato patch in a hurry.
So like
there's
in
a
five
lot of
minutes.
Challenges, and our farmers face a lot of challenges with the farming as well. So, yeah, it's a part of my life that you know, I've enjoyed doing, and I do, however, look forward to the day when I can, you know, write full time, and so that's the direction I'm heading.
We may never hear from you again if you write full time. You'll go off into that dungeon of darkness, and that'll be the end of us. No more Harleys for us. So,
or trains. Did you find that in my bio?
I saw the trains, and I'm thinking, what's she talking about, trains? Okay, tell us about the trains.
So I actually drove an Amtrak train from right outside of Santa Barbara, probably the Goleta area, all the way up to San Luis Obispo once many years ago. I was not an engineer, but I was invited up into the, and we were actually, the train was going backwards. So I was actually in the caboose, which also has engineering components. You know, you can drive the train from the caboose, and we were in the front. So the train was essentially going backwards, and the engines were pushing behind. But yes, I drove the train. I throttled it down. I throttled it back up. I blew the whistle at intersections. It was great.
See, ladies
trains,
and gentlemen.
Trains, jet skis, boats, cars, motorcycles. I've done
horses.
Everything, but I think, yeah, horses. I think I've done just about everything but plane. I have not flown a plane yet, but I still have a few years left in me.
The next time we talk, I guarantee you she will have flown a plane. and I'm going to talk to her again on August the 28th. She will be back, ladies and gentlemen. So, before we run out of time, we've got a few minutes left, but before we run out of time, which sometimes we do, if somebody wanted to go to your website, where would they go?
So my website is rohmorgon.com, and that's rohmorgon.com, and it's getting ready to undergo a major revision. It's kind of an outdated website, but the links on there are all up to date. And they will link you to the publishing page and to the Amazon page for the books. And there's actually three out right now. There's the novel, Watcher Book, One of the Chosen, and then two novellas. One is called The Last Trace. It is a 1840s mountain man story in which he encounters an evil she-demon, or at least that's what he thinks she is. And then the other is called The Games Monsters Play, and it's, I'd like to call it corporate espionage with a bite. And Ooh. Those are both supporting stories in the Chosen series. They involve side characters from the main novels. And then Runner, the sequel to Watcher, will be out in October. Watcher is undergoing a major revision right now and will be reissued a little bit later this summer with new material inside, a fresh professional edit, and a brand new cover. So I'm really excited about that. In fact, today I just got the first draft of the cover, and I'm so excited about it. So, yeah, everything's getting ready to get a big revamp.
So now, if they wanted to find you on Facebook, where would they find you?
I'm under Ro Morgan. And also there's Ro Morgan and there's Ro Morgan Writer, and then there's also a Watcher Book One of the Chosen page. So I have three Facebook pages. So,
you sound like me. Yes. Now, when you finish with your vampires, when they decide that they want to rest for a while, what direction are you going to go in? Do you know?
I'll probably work on the Forbidden Doorway stories, but I've got a ways to go. I am right now working on the third book, Seeker, and I will be using my trip to Romania that I took last year as background for that story. So I actually took a trip to Romania with Dacre Stoker, who is the great-grandnephew of Bram Stoker, and we took a two-week tour throughout Transylvania and Wallachia, exploring the roots of the historical Vlad Tepes, as well as the fictional Dracula. And so I have lots of great material for settings and backstory for the third book, which is what I'm working on now. So that one's probably going to keep me busy for the next year or so.
When you were in Romania, did you feel the ambiance and the environment?
The vibe.
Yes.
Our first night in the Carpathian Mountains was amazing. We stepped out on the balcony of this neat little hotel, kind of more like a bed and breakfast. And we were right in the just at the very beginnings of the Carpathian Mountains. And so this ring of mountains kind of wrapped around our hotel. And I'm overlooking these picturesque hay fields with their hay. They stack it like little beehives. It looks like a dome. And so this hay field's dotted with these domed haystacks that they've been doing for hundreds of years in that fashion. And the moon comes out from behind the clouds, and all the dogs start barking and howling. And that is actually in the opening to Dracula, the dogs barking and howling, accompanying Jonathan Harker. So we step out on that balcony in the Carpathians, and it was just magical. And I have to tell you, there's nothing like reading the opening scenes to Dracula sitting in the Borgo Pass, reading those scenes to the heir of the Dracula estate, and then having him read sections of Dracula to us. That was amazing.
Oh, I bet it was. Oh, giving me chills. That was a trip of a lifetime.
It was. And, you know, yeah, the vampires are going to have their fangs in me for a while.
Oh, my goodness. So, ladies and gentlemen, believe it or not, we are getting toward the... I told you this hour would fly by, didn't I?
You bet.
Just, I don't know where the hour goes, ladies and gentlemen, but y'all know that an hour with me is here and gone in 5 minutes. Tomorrow night, we will have Miss Brandy Newman, who is a musician. She's an indie musical artist. She is coming to see us, and we're going to play a couple of her songs. She plays music spanning from the 70s to present, from rock to classical rock to pop and country. Now, that should be an interesting, interesting interview. On Friday night, Hajay Outlaw will be my guest. He is a writer and a comedian, and he's out of Chicago. He is also an author who writes under the name of John P. Kettleham. Some of his heroes, if for lack of mentors or people he looked up to, were Richard Pryor, Rodney Dangerfield, and Eddie Murphy. So it should be fun talking to him. Then on Saturday night, because last week I missed my interview with this lovely lady because I thought I was going to have to take my husband to the hospital, she has agreed to come on Saturday night. Miss Melissa Green, who is a mother, a wife, a homeschooler. She does her makes her own food. I mean, this woman is amazing. And it will be fun to talk to her because I've been friends with her on Facebook for several years now. I've watched her children grow up, and I've watched some of the struggles that she's had with people that don't understand the importance of some of the things she does. So it will be fun talking to her. And before we run out of time, I want to thank Ro for being here, because I don't know about her, but I've had a enormously wonderful time, Ro. Thank you so much for agreeing to come on. And yes, ladies and gentlemen, she is going to bless us with her presence on February the 28th. So keep that in mind. She should have some new work out by then, or very close. Right, Ro?
Yes, yes, I will. And I want to thank you, Yvonne, for hosting me on your show. I've had a wonderful time. I would love to chat more with you. So I'm looking forward to our date in February.
Absolutely. Me too, because sword fighting and rapiers and other lives and Mustangs. We had horses. I had two paints. I had a mare and her baby, and my son had a Mustang. And that Mustang was the most beautiful creature. My paint was gorgeous. And when I had to move and I had to sell my horses, it broke my heart.
Yeah, that's always a tough thing. Mine have, I'm fortunate. I've, of my three Mustangs, I'm down to one now, and the others have both kind of passed on, here on the ranch. And I had 18 years with each of them, and they were wonderful. And I've now got the baby that I had originally adopted. She was only 2 months when I got her, and she's 19 now. And
oh, my.
So, yeah.
So, ladies and gentlemen, unless you've had horses, they are some of the smartest creatures. On my paint would go to sleep in the crook of my arm. That's how trusting she was. And she had been abused. And I worked with her and worked with her and worked with her. And she trusted me to love her. And I would have taken nothing for the years that I had with her and her baby. They were magnificent. So thank you for bringing those memories back to the forefront of my mind and making me smile about my horses and seeing you with yours and telling that story. That story in itself just blows my mind. It's wonderful. So, ladies and gentlemen, you know I say this at the end of every show. If you want to achieve greatness, please stop asking permission, because nobody's going to give it to you. You just have to go out and grab it and run with it like you stole it. And I always say this, don't just feel special, be special, because we are all dreamers. And if we didn't have dreamers and if we didn't encourage dreamers, we would not be having this conversation with Ro. We would not be having this radio show. We would not be going to the moon. We would not have the things that we have in our society if we did not have dreamers. So whatever person that you're around that has a dream, please don't poo-poo it. Encourage them. Help them make that dream real. And if you have a dream, don't allow anyone to steal it. Don't give them permission. And I always say this too, ladies and gentlemen, and you know this, your smile is your logo, your personality is your business card, and how you leave others feeling after having an experience with you, ladies and gentlemen, that becomes your trademark. And I know this with all of my heart because I have seen it in action. There have been days in my life when I wanted to crawl into that pit and stay, and somebody was kind to me. They don't know what they did for me that day. They have no idea how they made me feel and how it brightened my day. So leave your trademark and leave a positive trademark. Encourage people, encourage your children, encourage your spouse, encourage your significant other, encourage your siblings, encourage your friends, encourage yourself, because our young people are our future and we are the present. And Ro, thank you again, my dear. This hour has been off the chain.
Thank you much, Yvonne.
And you are welcome. Been. Yes, it has. So, ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank you for joining us tonight. My guest, Ro Morgan, go and get her books, please. Hook up with her on Facebook. Go to her website. That's ROHMORGON. And join us tomorrow night at 8 o'clock Eastern Daylight Time when we interview our next guest, Brandy Newman, with Brandy Reloaded. And pass us around. Let's keep this show going, because without all of y'all, we wouldn't have a show. And again, I am so appreciative. Ro, any quick thoughts you have? You've got about 5 seconds.
I got 5 seconds. Everybody have a wonderful evening, and we'll see you in February.
Absolutely. So, ladies and gentlemen, this is your host, Yvonne Mason, with Off the Chain, and my guest, Ro Morgan, saying good evening and sleep well. So we're off the air now, Ro, but what we're talking about will show up in the archives. But I did want to remind you, as soon as we get off from here and this thing goes up, I'm going to tag you in it and spread it everywhere.
Okay. Yeah, I'm still getting a hang on of social media. That's I have not been in marketing mode until the last month or so, just because I didn't have enough product to really push my books. But with the second book coming out in October, I'm moving into that, so I'm getting a little better handle on my social media, and so yeah, I will do my utmost best to help bring you along.
Well, I want it for you. I want you to, because this is my gift to you. When I send you all those other links, post them everywhere, because, and encourage people to go listen to them. Send them to your friends, to your enemies, to your in-laws, to your outlaws, people you don't even know, because that's what it's about, is networking with each other and helping each other succeed. And if you need any help in marketing, let me know. I can put together a video for you from Amito, and it's a cute little video, and they have all this wonderful music. We can put that together, and I can send you the link, and you can throw it out there. There's so much I can teach you.
Oh, that would be great. Yeah, I'm actually I am interested in the advertising that you mentioned. So as soon as I get my new covers, I'll start being able to do more promotion. Right now I'm just kind of trying to lay some of the foundation, but I definitely am interested in that.
Well, honey, I'm here. I'm as far away as a message. Anything I can do to help get you out there even more, just let me know. And, of course, you're coming back in February.
Oh, yes.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much for hosting me and for fitting me in, because I know I slid into an unfilled spot sort of at the last, minute when you were booking spots.
You were supposed to, though. Yeah, you were supposed
to. That's right.
We are supposed to be here tonight. Yes, it was.
Yes.
I believe that. So I will say thank you again, and I will be talking to you. And as soon as I get this in archives, I'll send it to you, and we'll just go from there, my darling.
All right, and I'll see you on Facebook.
All right, sweetheart. Talk to you later.
Okay, you too. Thanks, and bye-bye.
Good night. Uh-huh. Bye-bye.